Well, good morning. If I remember correctly, the last time someone representing, or at least involved in Youth for Christ was on this stage was our former chairman of the board, and I believe that he actually did a dance on request. We won't mention who that person is, but that will not be happening with me this morning, to your benefit, and I won't be asking Scott Norland to come back up either. Let me pray before I begin. Lord, thank you for allowing us to gather this morning as a body of believers to glorify you through the work that you allow us to do here in this city. And so we are compelled by the gospel to act upon our heart change. And that is that as you changed us and opened our eyes to see the world through a different lens, we see individuals that we've heard about this morning, people who need help, people who need to be invested in, young couples, people who may not have a bed. Lord, let us not take for granted the kind of work that you allow us to do here in this city. In Jesus' name, amen. Youth for Christ is a ministry about stories, and so I want to share one with you. Coming up on the screen, I want you to think about this question. What do you see? And the first photo should be something of a very familiar object. I want you to look very closely, though, because what at first this appears to be may not actually be. Some of you may actually recognize this location, and I'm guessing a few people here have driven over this hundreds of times. What do you see? Bridge? What else? Shout it out. I'm good with participation. Trees, a road, a guardrail. All right, so we're observant this morning. Every service folks are a sharp crew. Let's take a look at another photo. How about this one? Zoom in a little bit closer. What do you see? Shout it out. Bridge. Rocks. Riverbed. Is anybody recognizing this location by chance? Let's zoom in a little bit closer. Where are we now? Under the bridge. What do you see? Rocks. Yeah. Yeah, these all seem to be very common things, but I see something a little bit different than you do. Let's take a look at the next one. What do you see here? Chautauqua Park. The pavilion. Let's zoom in closer one more time. What do you see here? Okay. The bandstand. Support beams. Yeah, and once again, I see something just slightly different than you do. Let's take a look at another one. Recognize this building? Got to look really close in this one. What do we see? Stairs. Anyone know where this is? From Burlington? Yep, right before the train overpass. All right. Let's take a look at the next slide. This location probably has not been visited by many in this room, I'm guessing. But that's here in Hastings. What do you see? Trash. Yeah. Big pile. Some industrial stuff. Let's zoom in a little bit closer on those two white doors. You're now inside of those two white doors. And you see, once again, buckets, garbage, boards, and things like that. All right, next slide. Let's change one thing about each one of these photos and look just a little bit closer, and you'll see what I saw. You see, I was there in all of those locations for a very particular reason. Next slide. On the top left, you see the rock picture under the bridge, but now we've inserted something that changes everything. This is my friend Robert. I met Robert one day when he wandered into my office. I literally thought he was going to die on the floor. He wandered in. It was probably about 10 degrees outside. He was coughing profusely, and he was asking for help. And about the only thing I knew to help him at that moment was pray that he wouldn't die on my office floor, and get him some food. So I went down to Arby's, and we had lunch. Next slide. Here's the same pavilion, and once again, Robert, and some books. And I visited Robert in this location because this is one of the places where he slept in addition to under the 281 bridge. Next slide. Here's the building that you saw on Burlington, that second set of stairs in the back there. This particular day when I took this photo, the night before I had visited Robert here, it was 5 degrees. And this was a pretty nice day. The sun was out, so it was a little bit warmer in the teens. Next one. And here's the junk picture. So I had just brought Robert back home after church, and I was dropping him off near his bedroom inside those two white doors where he was sleeping. You see, Robert moved back and forth between these locations because you can't stay at Chautauqua Pavilion past 11 p.m., and he'd gotten busted by the police there, and so he had moved downtown, and then he had moved here, and I never knew quite where he was going to be, but I figured out the pattern, and that pattern began the first day when I learned that he was living underneath that 281 bridge south of Hastings by the International Tractor Dealership and Catfish Farm right there. In getting to know Robert, I told him, you know, Robert, now that I know you, there's no possible way I can allow you to continue sleeping under this bridge. So do you have a place to go tonight? And he said, yes, I do. And I said, great. So if I drive down to that bridge tomorrow morning, I will not find you under there. And he said, that's correct. The next morning, I drove down into the ditch and walking up on that same bridge, kind of felt like I should holler out or something. There was no door to knock on, and there was Robert underneath the bridge, and I asked if I could come in, and he said yes, and that's where I snapped that first photo. Robert and I were hanging out in his little camp. Next one. So that was unacceptable, so I moved Robert into this hotel on Highway 6, said, you can stay here for about 3 to 4 nights because I just can't have you sleeping where you're sleeping. It's frigid. My kids and I had actually gone and gotten him a sleeping pad and a zero-degree sleeping bag when Kmart was still open, and he slept in that on that Burlington step. And I just was so uncomfortable with that. And see, what God was doing through this story was opening my eyes to the fact that the gospel teaches us that we must view the world through a different lens. You know, I just don't know how many people are homeless on the streets. There's probably experts here who do know that. But Robert had crossed my path for a very particular reason, and it changed my view of youth ministry pretty much forever. Click ahead one there. So I got Robert a bike because he was walking everywhere, and he couldn't walk very far because of his lung condition. So we got him a bicycle, and so now he was able to tool around town and come to my office. Started to equip him with Bible studies. He wanted some Bible studies, and so I started giving them to him, and he was devouring them. The pile of books you saw at Chautauqua Park on the table there was his Bible study books. Got him a large print Bible because he couldn't see very well. Next one. So then we needed to try to reestablish Robert's identity. Believe it or not, his name was and is Robert Smith. Robert Smith, homeless. How do you get his identity reestablished? No driver's license, no social security card, only one single debit card. And so we worked with the Social Security Administration to reestablish Robert's identity. We found the county, and I've actually held in my hands the birth certificate that he had. Robert was 57 years old and was born, I forget, somewhere in the East Coast. So we reestablished his identity and got him a Social Security card, and things started to look up. Next slide. We moved Robert into the Good Samaritan Village, into this apartment, and some people donated some pretty incredible things. Equipped the whole place with furniture and food, bedroom set, and a place to study. Robert even had an opportunity for a job at the Good Samaritan Center working in the maintenance area. And he's looking a lot better here, I would say. I got to know his story of how he became homeless, and it was compelling. So I tell you this story instead of telling you a story about a teen because it literally changed how I thought about who we help and how God teaches us to see them. See, at one point, I was no different than Robert, lost, wandering, no resources. Apart from the gospel, I really had nothing, and yet my life appeared to be okay. And I fear that that's kind of how we sometimes see teens, is that as long as they're getting an education and as long as they're getting food, maybe it's even from the food pantry at the middle school, but that's okay. You know, someone will stock that. Then maybe we aren't compelled to do much more. But I think that the gospel pulls on our hearts to change that. And so, again, my proposition to you this morning is that the gospel teaches us to see the world through a different lens, and my lens had changed. Unfortunately, Robert's story does not have a great ending, but I don't even know the ending. Robert disappeared. One day I got a call from the manager that you see there, and he had left every possession behind, which is unusual, because when I met him, all he had was a backpack, and it was even left there. And so we looked through his stuff for some clues. The back door was open, and I never saw Robert again. One of my friends, several months later, ran into him at Super Saver in Grand Island. He was sitting outside on the sidewalk, and I don't know what happened to him. That's where the story changes between Robert and the kids that we serve. We know where they are, and the doors are wide open for us to help. So let's take a look at a text this morning. It'll be coming up on your screen from Mark chapter 5. You can turn your Bibles there, or you can read along with me up here on the screen. I'll simply read through this story, and I want you to think about the gospel lens that I'm proposing to you. So we're in the second half of verse 24, Mark chapter 5. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better but rather grew worse. She's sick, she's poor, has no resources, and probably very little hope as this condition grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch his garment, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." This is a fascinating story for a lot of reasons, and I'll sum for the sake of time. But let's consider this woman who needed to encounter Jesus, had nothing, worsening condition. I'm assuming she perhaps could die because of this condition. And yet she came out amidst the throng. She came out and sought out the only person that she thought could bring her hope and healing and change in her life. And that key verse, which will be coming up on the screen, Jesus turned and he looked around to see who had done it. Now, to see in this context can mean to look. If you look further into the meaning of that word can also mean to experience. And I believe that this is why Jesus was turning around. The disciples were kind of chastising him. "Hey, you know, we've already been asked to go and try to help this young girl that they think has died." And then the report comes that she has died. And yet Jesus in this moment pauses and he looks around in the throng. "Who touched me? Who do I need to see? Who do I need to change? Who needs to experience me in a unique and powerful way?" One of the commentators on this passage, when her faith is declared as healing her, said that Christ puts honor upon faith because faith gives honor to Christ. Is it not this faith that I went and got lunch for Robert, or this faith that I could step out and try to improve his quality of life, this faith that compelled me to ensure that he heard the gospel and knew the truth about Jesus? I think it's this same faith that this woman is using and we see in this story. And hopefully it's the same faith that compels us to go to the ministry sites that we have here in Hastings. You see, at Youth for Christ, we believe that every teen deserves to hear the gospel from a caring adult. Unlike many Youth for Christ chapters who are trying to build relationships with schools and youth prisons and find places to go and open doors, we don't have that challenge here. The doors are wide open, we're being asked to come, and we simply need people and resources to do it. And I think that that is a unique move of God here in this city. There's no possible way we could open the doors that are opening in front of us. We're having opportunities to share similar stories like today with social services here in Hastings, and we're now on intake forms listed as the possible mentors for a young girl who comes in and is pregnant. We're there. We have opportunities to share with state-funded institutions and organizations who are helping people with other needs, and then we can help with the only thing we know that can bring hope, and that is sharing the gospel. And so a little while back, Pastor Scott shared and showed up on the screen this book, and my confession is that, sorry, Pastor, I actually got on Amazon and ordered it during the service in that moment because I take book recommendations very seriously. But there's a passage I want to read to you from this book that is extraordinarily compelling. So Hudson Taylor had just had an extraordinary encounter with God upon which he became saved. And he wrote in his journal this statement: "Well do I remember how, in the gladness of my heart, I poured out my soul before God, again and again confessing my grateful love to him who had done everything for me, who had saved me when I had given up all hope and even desire for salvation. I besought him to give me some work to do for him as an outlet for love and gratitude. Well do I remember, as I put myself, my life, my friends, my all upon the altar, the deep solemnity that came over my soul with the assurance that my offering was accepted. The presence of God became unutterably real and blessed. And I remember stretching myself on the ground and lying there before him with unspeakable awe and unspeakable joy. For what service I was accepted, I knew not. But a deep consciousness that I was not my own took possession of me, which has never since been effaced." If we think, the narrators say, that boys or girls in their teens are too young for such soul experiences, we are indeed mistaken. At no time in life is there greater capacity for devotion if the heart's deepest springs are open to the love of Christ. And that's what compels us. It compels us, the love of Christ, to go into our ministry sites. And so I have a slide up here with the ministry sites that we're currently at. We go into school systems. Here in Hastings, the picture you see there is at the Hastings Middle School at 7 a.m. in the morning. That's a small group of boys working with two of our college volunteers there. They're going through the Bible lesson, sitting up there on the bleachers. The center ministry there called Juvenile Justice Ministry, that's a picture of the Hastings Regional Center, where every single week we go out and work with 24 boys who are there for a chemical addiction, a crime, and oftentimes a mental illness. I sat with one of those boys just a couple of days ago to interview him and to play that interview at our upcoming Comedy Cafe banquet this Saturday. I got to know this boy pretty well, and in a unique turn of circumstances, I actually have been friends with his parents for over 20 years. The way that God opened my eyes to his soul because of that connection was very powerful and overwhelming. At the end of the interview, I asked him, "How could we help you, or how could we help the boys that are out here the best? I want to hear from you. Rather than us thinking we know all the answers, tell me, how can we help you the most?" I thought he would maybe say, "Hey, bring Burger King lunch like you just did every day." I thought maybe he'd say, "Come out here and ball up with us, play basketball," or something like that. But he looked at me and he said, "You know what? We just need someone to come here and listen so that we don't spend our days thinking our thoughts away." Of anything he could have said, he just confessed that he wants a caring adult in his life. That's powerful. And I was moved. The last ministry that you see there is called Parent Life. Parent Life is a brand new ministry that we launched, starting kind of a soft start last March at our comedy cafe. And then God has been opening doors throughout this last year to start being in relationships with some teen parents. We've identified in this community over 35 pregnant and parenting teenagers. It represents more babies than that, because typically a teen parent who has one child is at high risk to have a second. It's about 80%, I believe, if I remember right. And so Diana Hansen and Steve Hansen were one of our first volunteers to sign up for Parent Life. See, Diana was sitting there at our comedy cafe, and God moved upon her heart. In a similar way that I saw Robert, she sees these young men and women. See, oftentimes the boyfriends are around. And that's why Steve joined up, because he thought that he could answer that call. I'd like to work with a young man or two. Now, these two folks are uniquely qualified to work with under-resourced teens, as many of you know, having served heartily in the foster care system. And so it's been a really, really high encouragement to me to be on a team with Diana. And I want to show you a short video that was produced by the Lincoln Parent Life crew to illustrate the story of one teen mom. And while you watch this, if you would think about it, think about her through the lens that I'm asking you to look at. The same story that I've laid out to you with Robert and how I began to see Robert. Look at this girl and listen to the power of her words as she shares with her mentor, Julie. That's a compelling story. Did you hear it? I was no different. You showed me that I was no different than anyone else. You see, teen pregnancy can oftentimes be the separation point. We know of girls who've gotten kicked out of their homes here in Hastings when they made the announcement to their parents that they were pregnant. And yet her words just echo in my soul. I'm no different. I belong here. Thank you, Julie. So with the confessions of our kids themselves in our schools and in our youth prisons and teens who are pregnant and parenting, they want adults in their lives. I'll make the simple appeal to you that we need help. We need folks to join Diana's team to help pregnant and parenting teens. We need folks to join us at club at the middle school to invest in a young middle school girl or boy. We have an exciting new ministry launching that we'll be announcing at the Comedy Cafe regarding some high school students. And then we also need men to rise up and come out to the regional center with us. Now you can say, well, I don't play basketball and maybe I don't even know the Bible very well. Is there a role for me? There is. There's a role for everyone. As a matter of fact, you can impact kids with the gospel by even coming to help at the office. You see, we think that all of those pieces of the ministry come together to bring Bibles to the guys at the juvenile center, and that changes lives. It allows our volunteers to have the time to bring a pregnant teen to their OB check or even to be there during their delivery. Every single effort of every single one of our volunteers, we see as an end the fact that we can help these kids that are in need. And so we would love for you to do that. As my time is ending, I do want to make an invitation even more tangible. So coming up in about a week on Saturday, we all know that all of you men are going to be at the Ron Brown Haymops rally, which means that there's going to be a bunch of women looking for something to do, and you all can come out and have a fun night at our Youth for Christ Comedy Cafe, where we'll have a comedian and dessert, and you'll be able to hear some exciting announcements about the ministry of Youth for Christ. Come out and have a free, fun night on us. All of you men, go to Ron Brown, come back changed, charged up to share the gospel with your friends. And all you gals, come to the Comedy Cafe and help us fill the house to hear about the mission of Youth for Christ. Thank you so much for your contributions. To Tom, as leader of the missions team here, thank you so much for sitting with me at breakfast and weeping a little with me of your heart to see this community changed and the passions that God has put on your heart to invest in kids. We're on board with you. Thank you for being on board with us. Board members and volunteers from this church have been many since I've come on in this role, and I want to thank you, church, for all that you have done. So include us in your prayers. Let us know how you want to be involved. There's a sign-up sheet in the back on the back table. If you want to come to Comedy Cafe, scribble your name on there. We'll contact you. If you want information or to sit down with us on how you can be involved as a volunteer, financial partner, or in another way, we can get a hold of you that way as well. So thank you so much.